I'm Mark Simpson, and this is Intersection. The space shuttle era is closing out this week with Shuttle Atlantis landing at the Kennedy Space Center. Now, the big question is, what's next? NASA is partnering with private space companies to take astronauts and cargo into orbit to the International Space Station. But there's also a space tourism industry that's growing around the U.S. Those companies hope to someday leave from spaceports and make space travel as routine as going to the airport. On this episode of Intersection, we delve into commercial spaceflight. We'll hear from folks working the halls of Congress and talk with private space company Virgin Galactic about their efforts to launch from a spaceport in New Mexico. And we'll also learn about the next steps for NASA and Kennedy Space Center in the post-shuttle era. Those conversations ahead on Intersection. And we're talking spaceports and commercial space on Intersection. From the studios of KPCC in Pasadena, I'm joined by George Whitesides. He's CEO of private space venture Virgin Galactic. George, welcome to Intersection.
Hi, nice to be on.
Great to have you with us. We're also joined by retired Rear Admiral Craig Steidel. He's president of the Commercial Spaceflight Federation, a group that represents private space companies in Washington, D.C. He joins us by phone from his office there. Craig, welcome.
Well, thank you, Mark.
Good to have you with us, too. So, guys, the commercial space race is on as the shuttle era is closing out. There are two main marketplaces for commercial flight. One is the space tourism area. The other, flying astronauts and NASA cargo and research up to the International Space Station. George Whitesides of Virgin Galactic, your company is making a big push on the space tourism side of things. How close are you to putting paying passengers into space?
Well, I think the answer is we're getting quite close now. We have vehicles that are flying now. It's based on technology that has already sent people to space using the Spaceship One series of vehicles. And you know, we're hoping to go to space next year. So I think the answer is we're getting quite close.
Next year. So that means you've got people lined up and the vehicle has gone through some testing process. So you're feeling quite confident at this point.
Yeah, we're not all the way there yet. We're not all the way through our development program. And, you know, you never know what's going to happen in a development program, whether it'll take a little bit longer or not. But things are looking good. We've got 440 people who've signed up. Most of those folks have put down the full deposit, the full price of our ticket, which is $200,000. So we have a lot of people who have put a lot of confidence into Galactic that we're going to take them into space.
Now, I've seen some pictures of the spaceport that's being built out in the New Mexico desert, and I wonder how close is that to being ready, and is that contingent on that spaceport being finished before you can start launching?
Well, it is. I mean, we've committed to the state that the spaceport down there, which is called Spaceport America, will be our home and our headquarters. And they're getting close as well. I think they'll be finished up around the same time as we will, sort of next year, roughly. And, you know, it's looking beautiful. They've got a brand new facility out there. It's a custom-built facility for commercial space, and it's going to be a great place to fly.
And describe, if you could, both what that spaceport looks like and for people who haven't seen Spaceship One and the way that it launches, should they be thinking of something along the lines of the space shuttle?
Well, that's a great question. And the answer is not really, but sort of. We have an air-launched architecture, which means basically we have two vehicles. One is an airplane. It's sort of a weird-looking airplane, but it's an airplane. And then we have a spaceship. And what we do is we hook the spaceship under the airplane, and the airplane takes off just like any other airplane from a runway and circles up to about 50,000 feet where it releases the spaceship. And it's only there that the spaceship activates its rocket motor and sort of points upward. So that's for safety reasons. We think that using airplane technologies for the first 50,000 feet adds a lot of safety margin to our design. And then both vehicles basically land at the same runway. So I guess, you know, just to describe the spaceport, it's pretty simple. It's got a long runway just like any other runway. And then it's got a beautiful new terminal hangar facility, which we'll be using for training our astronauts and you know, storing our vehicles. And then it's got a bunch of sort of space kind of infrastructure, fuel tanks and the like.
So the idea there being that it's cheaper to launch from dropping from an airplane and then blasting off for the last part of the journey than building a big rocket stage that has to take off from the ground like NASA currently has been doing with the shuttle.
Yeah, it is cheaper, but it's also, we think, safer because, you know, we've had 100 years of history with aviation technologies, and it's extremely reliable and predictable. And so we basically use aviation technologies for the first 50,000 feet up and the last 50,000 feet down, and we think that is an important safety differentiator for us.
Now, you're committed to this Spaceport America in New Mexico. You've signed a 20-year lease to operate out of the spaceport, and I think a lot of listeners in Florida are scratching their heads at the idea of a spaceport out there because so much of the U.S. space program has lifted off from Kennedy Space Center. So why are you there and not here?
Well, I mean, the short answer is I think, twofold. And before I say those two things, I want to say something, which is the facilities in Florida are fantastic, and I think Florida is going to have a bright future overall with these new companies that are going to be operating. There are going to be a bunch of them that will be operating from KSC and other spaceports. I believe there are a few others down there in Florida that are in planning. But the reason we're operating from the state of New Mexico is twofold. One is that they said they'd build a $200 million spaceport. Not exclusively for us, but we're the anchor tenant. And so we got to essentially design with them really a custom-built a spaceport, which was a fantastic opportunity for the company and I think for the state for economic growth. The other reason is that New Mexico has terrific weather, 330 days of sunshine every year. It's at about 4,500 feet elevation, so we're almost a mile closer to space. And we're adjacent to the White Sands Missile Range, so we have essentially unrestricted or protected airspace from ground all the way up to space, and so we don't have to worry as much about basically overpassing commercial aviation, which could interrupt a high rate of flight ops.
So, just walk me through, I guess, the building out of that spaceport. At the time those conversations were going to get things started, was Florida offering you any kind of incentive like a spaceport, or was that pretty much what clinched the deal?
It's before my time. I've only been with the company for about a year, but my sense is that I think New Mexico was really the one who was aggressively pursuing things back then. This was sort of, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, really, now, so it was several years ago.
Well, I want to bring Craig Steidel of the Commercial Spaceflight Federation into the conversation. Craig, there's a couple different spaceport designations already across the country. We've heard about Kennedy Space Center, Cecil Field near Jacksonville, the one in New Mexico, even Alaska. So what's the talk like in Washington, D.C. regarding spaceports? Do lawmakers have a tendency to favor one location over another?
Well, certainly the local lawmakers do. We look at this whole particular prospect as not a particular project or a particular spaceport, but an industry. It's the spaceport, the suborbital flights, both tourist and educational and scientific, the crew cargo and technical development. There's a wealth of opportunities in the future. The market looks very bright. Particularly beyond the great work that Galactic is doing, the science community is interested in participating, and that's also the educational institutions. So there's a market for that, and there's a market for multiple spaceports in this country. Now, if I could just jump upon some of the things you said before, you have down in Florida at KSC, there's an authority, there's an individual acting like a mayor, and you're doing very, very good, aggressive work in participating in all of our discussions on that.
Well, Craig, why are there, for example, two spaceport designations in Florida, one in Jacksonville and one at the Kennedy Space Center? Are they competing against each other, or is there a need to launch things not just from Kennedy in the Sunshine State?
Well, Mark, that's a very good question, and that's exactly the same question I asked when I heard that. I think one of them in the northern part of the state, locality, has got some funding for facilities and hangars and things of that nature, and I think the one in the southern part has got the infrastructure and the history. So taking your step one step further, your question, they should join together and perhaps talk about the synergisms of both of them working together.
What are you hearing on Capitol Hill? Is there a lot of support for having multiple spaces just across the country in a down economy?
Mark, that hasn't come up. We're focusing on the transition, the next step beyond the shuttle, and that is a commercial crew and cargo. and technology developments to produce that infrastructure. So the near term is getting the commercial and cargo ventures funded properly so we can get off the Soyuz. And next comes the technology development. So we haven't really, I haven't heard any in my conversations, which have been many, any specific focus on spaceports right at this time.
Where does the money come from for spaceports? Is there specifically designated funds that are committed to building spaceports across the U.S.?
I can really only speak to the New Mexico piece, which is that it was a mix of state revenues, essentially, state bonds. And then what the governor at the time did, this was Governor Richardson several years ago, he said, and the legislature as well, said, we're not going to allocate these state funds unless the local communities agree to basically vote for small taxes on a local basis, with the idea being that basically that would be a sign that they support this project. And two of the communities surrounding the spaceport voted for those taxes. And it's a sales tax, I believe. And basically, part of the money goes to the spaceport and part of the money goes to local science education for students in the area.
So, Craig, you know, knowing that NASA's Kennedy Space Center has been a federal government facility for so long, is there any talk of locals having to pick up the tab for a spaceport as it grows at Kennedy? Or is this something you foresee staying more in the federal realm?
Well, Mark, this is me being very naive in this area, but there are analogs to this from the maritime authorities that have federal and local actual funding lines to support those particular infrastructure upgrades. The bill is such that we need to have something on that particular level to provide support for this.
We're talking about commercial spaceports and commercial spaceflights on Intersection. My guests are Craig Steidel, president of the Commercial Spaceflight Federation, and George Whitesides, CEO of private space company Virgin Galactic. I'm Mark Simpson, and this is 90.7 WMFE-FM. What would you like to see commercial space industry achieve? You can share your thoughts on the WMFE Facebook and Twitter pages or the Florida Talks blog. Find out more by going to WMFE.org/intersection. George Whitesides, with Virgin Galactic having signed this 20-year lease to be out in New Mexico, is that risky to be committed to that location for so long if, for example, the state maybe downplays its role in the spaceport, or heck, even if the business doesn't take off, no pun intended?
Well, you know, I think all of us in the industry recognize that we're trying to do something new here, you know, and it's almost like the dawn of commercial aviation. I think we're all very hopeful that the future is bright, but there's risk involved. And that's sort of what makes America great, is a bunch of folks who are willing to take on risks to achieve great things. And so, you know, I think everybody knows that we're trying to do something new, both the state and us. And there are risks involved, but we think we got a good team, and the folks in the state are pretty committed, and we're pretty committed, and we're going to make it happen.
Are you at all concerned that future politicians, the governor, future administrations might be changing the deal somewhere down the line and Virgin gets stuck with a larger tab or anything like that?
Well, you know, you know, we actually just had a transition between governors. It had been Governor Richardson who sort of got this program off the ground, but now Governor Martinez, who's a different party than Governor Richardson, was elected. And so far the transition has gone overall, I think, well. They put in, you know, a new team, but also a good team. And so, you know, there's always the risk in any sort of government-related program of a switch after a change in administrations. But so far after this first change, we've been encouraged.
Craig Steidel, from where you sit in the nation's capital, when you see Virgin Galactic getting close to maybe within a year launching folks into space on the commercial side of things, how worried are you keeping an eye on international competition in the commercial space arena? Is that a big threat?
Well, no, I don't think it's a big threat. It's something we certainly keep our eye on. I have been really very impressed with the work that George is doing. In fact, I was a test pilot. I flew out there and flew his simulator a couple of weeks ago to see how it handles, and they're doing wonderful. I look at it from a positive side. What is going to take place in the near future? Science experiments, student educational experiments, and then also this science, technology, and educational systems that will support that. Mark, there's a lot of good things coming down the road here in the very near future for us, and I think we're ahead of it worldwide as a spacefaring country.
Well, what are some of those good things?
Well, what you're going to see is Virgin Galactic is going to be flying tourists and scientists. You're going to see a couple of companies doing cargo delivery in the by the end of the year to the space station, International Space Station, commercial companies. And then you're going to see commercial crew delivery to the space station. And that is going to allow NASA to then focus on what NASA is about, sustained, affordable, human robotic exploration. So you're going to see all those things taking place. And you're going to see this infrastructure being built to support all that and technology programs. And you're going to see spaceports, as you discussed earlier, being developed around the country to support that. So there's a lot of good things happening in this country.
Well, speaking about NASA and the Kennedy Space Center, later in the program we'll be talking with Ed Mango, who is the director of NASA's Commercial Crew Program. But I wonder, Craig, you know, we've been talking about astronauts and cargo. What about satellites and competition from other places in that sector of the space business? Is that going to be taking on a larger role as commercial grows?
I think so. I think what has already been demonstrated with some of the new entrants into the particular into the launch services providers, they're getting the cost down. It used to be $10,000 a pound to orbit. Now it's coming down significantly. And actually, our launch suppliers and services are bringing business back to this particular country. So as you get that cost down, you get the volume up, we're going to have more activity. And beyond that, you're going to have repair of existing satellites in orbit as well. And we're going to be the leader in the world to be able to do that.
George Whitesides, any chance of Virgin looking at, you know, the cargo side of things or even launching satellites, that kind of stuff?
Well, you know, all that stuff is really exciting, and it's stuff that we've been thinking about. We're very focused on getting this suborbital experience and service up and running. That's a pretty big challenge in itself. But, you know, my boss, Richard Branson, is always pushing us to think about, you know, what comes next and what kind of aspirations can we achieve. So we're definitely thinking about those things.
And just talk a little bit about that suborbital term, because we think of the shuttle low Earth orbit. That's different than suborbital. Can you explain the difference?
Sure. I mean, basically, when you go into orbit, you achieve a speed that allows you to sort of spin around the globe, not permanently, but for a while. Suborbital is more like you're getting shot up, but then you come down without sort of going around the globe. So suborbital, you don't have to go quite as fast, and so to a certain extent, it's a simpler engineering challenge, but also potentially maybe a little easier to accomplish.
Well, I'd like to get both your thoughts on why it is that commercial space flights are being viewed as so much cheaper than launching the space shuttle. It costs about $450 million for a shuttle launch. So, you know, NASA's been at this a long time. Why would a private space company with less experience be able to keep costs down so much and NASA not?
I've seen tremendous innovation in the commercial side. I was at NASA as the associate administrator, and so I was looking at it years ago. What the commercial side offers is new processes and procedures that take a lot of the overhead costs out of these particular things. NASA recently did an assessment of the actual costs, and they are coming down. The state of the technology today is built upon the shoulders of everything that's been done in the past, but it's new technology, new ways of manufacturing, new ways of doing everything from design to systems integration. So are you saying
that because the shuttle is so old that you're kind of stuck with what you got and you can only innovate so far with that vehicle?
Well, at that particular time when that was made, it was it's a tremendous machine, of course. And now you have the infrastructure going. It was built to build the International Space Station, and it did that. If you wanted to start from scratch again, you would have to do a very, very large investment. These new innovative companies have had the opportunity to start from scratch, so their model is different. And they've been able to get the cost out of it because of that.
George, you want to add to that?
Well, I think the answer is complicated, and it's dependent on a lot of things. But I think, you know, most people who've worked with the federal government know that, and I was chief of staff at the agency, know that the government can do many things very well. It doesn't often do things, or sometimes it has trouble innovating at the same pace as the private sector. And I think that's what's sort of exciting about this next phase of spaceflight is that you're going to have that rapid innovation because you'll have multiple companies competing against each other ongoingly. And I think that's what we see right now, both in suborbital and in orbital spaceflight. And I think that's what's going to drive the cost of spaceflight down over time.
We've been talking with George Whiteside, CEO of private space company Virgin Galactic. He joined us from the studios of KPCC in Pasadena. Thank you, George.
Thanks, Mark.
And Craig Steidel, president of the Commercial Spaceflight Federation from his office in Washington, D.C. Craig, thanks very much.
Thank you. You're welcome, Mark.
Coming up, we'll talk about what NASA's doing in the realm of commercial spaceflight. This is Intersection. Ed Mango has a long history with NASA and spaceflight. He's worked with the shuttle program and helped launch the prototype Ares 1X rocket. Mango's currently manager of NASA's commercial crew and cargo program. Ed, welcome to Intersection.
Goodness, good to be here.
It's great to talk with you. So, Ed, the final shuttle mission is getting ready to wrap up the entire shuttle program. You're with the commercial crew program. So how is that going? How close are we to getting a commercial crew into space?
See, we are making outstanding progress. Today, we're the program is executing what's called Commercial Crew Development Number 2, which started a number of months ago and will complete basically next spring, early summer. And it's really a maturity of design states for the various partners that we have today. We have four partners today. The next goal is to get into an integrated design state, and we think we'll be able to start that sometime next summer and go for a couple years. And then the last part of the process is going to be our certification, which will go for a couple years until the partners have certified that they can meet our requirements. And once they do that, then we'll be able to put crew on board.
So you're talking about designing an actual spacecraft, and you're in that phase right now?
That's correct. We're doing spacecraft as well as the launch vehicle. Today, most of the focus is on spacecraft. We think that's the longest pole or the longest thing that has to get done. And then it has to be integrated fully with a launch vehicle.
When you're doing all this, you're working with multiple companies. How do you manage which one is going to be the final product? Or is there a final product? Will the end result be multiple launch vehicles and crew capsules or crew vehicles?
We are looking for multiple options. We would like competition all the way through the development and into services.
We're talking with Ed Mango. He is the head of NASA's Commercial Crew and Cargo Program, and you're listening to Intersection. What are some of the designs that are out there that you're working with?
See, for the Commercial Crew Development Number 2, CCDEV 2, we have four partners. One of them is Boeing, and Boeing has a capsule-type design. That will go basically to low Earth orbit. All of our designs go to low Earth orbit, go to the space station, can go to other locations on low Earth orbit, and then basically land like a capsule on the land. And then we also have SpaceX and their Dragon capsule, which they are currently on contract with NASA for cargo, and they would like to upgrade that to have a capability to fly crew on that vehicle. That also is a capsule that will fly and go to various locations in low Earth orbit, including ISS, International Space Station, and then it will come back and also land on land. Then we also have Sierra Nevada out of Colorado, and they have what they call a Dream Chaser, which is a lifting body similar, much smaller, to what the shuttle is. And they will launch vertically, like the shuttle, and land horizontally on a runway. And so That brings to a different set of design characteristics that they have to work through. That's the third one. And the last one is out of Blue Origin, which is out of Washington State. And they have basically a biconic kind of design that is basically a capsule with a cone kind of design on the bottom to help control it to some extent during entry. And then it will land basically on land as well. So all four of those are going through preliminary design kind of capabilities right now. And over the next year, they hope to mature those to a state where they are now ready for an integrated design solution.
Historically, we've looked at NASA as kind of being the driving force behind designing capsules and putting out what the requirements would be. So what is your role in working with these companies? Are you helping to suggest design features, or are you just providing testing? Or how does it work with your partnership with these companies that are trying to come through with these various designs?
A very good question. I get that question a lot. What NASA's role here is to make sure that the vehicles in the end are designed to our safety requirements. And so our whole focus of the program is to make sure that the companies understand our requirements, our safety requirements, are designing to our safety requirements, and eventually can certify, which is through test and analysis, that their design does indeed meet our certification requirements. NASA will still be accountable for the safety of the crew, whatever design we end up with. And so in order to make sure of that, our whole focus is, are they designing a vehicle that we can put our astronauts on? That's the whole focus of everything that NASA is doing with the commercial crew partners.
Is that very much different from what NASA has done historically in the past in terms of designing spacecraft?
It's not radically different. The radical difference is that we are not making the design trades all the way down to the what bolt to use and how much to torque that bolt, which is what we do in a normal NASA program. We are letting the partners do all those trades and all those details. What we're doing is we're helping them, we're watching them, we're talking with them, we're giving them our advice. But in the end, the trades are truly theirs. In the standard NASA program, like Shuttle, we had to okay every change to every drawing, all the way down to the bolt or the wire or the sensor. And in this case, we will not be doing that. We will let them make those trades. We'll see how those trades affect the safety requirements that we have on the books. And if they are acceptable, then we'll go ahead and basically say that that trade and that engineering fix is good.
Why was it taking so long with NASA?
I think the difference there is you it takes a long time when you have a contractor who has a proposal for a design and then NASA to fully evaluate every aspect of that design and then approve every aspect of that design. That's because it's that combination of the two that takes a bit longer time. And in our case, since we're not basically approving every single drawing, we can save the time it would take for NASA to review and approve each drawing, and it's really the approval of each drawing. We still will look at all their design work and say that that design work is still safe enough.
You know, there's a goal of having U.S. astronauts flying on commercial spacecraft, going up maybe to space station and going on to other goals by about 2015. Do you think, given what you're seeing on the ground, is that an attainable goal?
Absolutely. I believe we could make the middle of the decade. I'm very confident that if we were to be given the budget that we have requested or the president has requested, that we can get there by the middle of the decade.
Ed Mango is manager of NASA's Commercial Crew Program. Ed, thanks so much for talking with me.
All right, thank you, and have a great day.
When do you think commercial space vehicles should be flying? Tell us on the WMFE Facebook and Twitter pages. Sign up for our weekly podcast and visit WMFE.org/intersection to find out more. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners and from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Amy Green is the assistant producer. I'm Mark Simpson, and thanks for listening.